My birth name was Vera Roll, and I was born in Romania in April 1937. And in 1941, we were deported and herded into a concentration camp in Ukraine, where my father died before I was five. Well, we were thrown into a concentration camp that was not a death camp. It was essentially a transit camp. We were left to starve, but the fear of being put on a list for you to be sent to a death camp was always hovering over everyone. So it was a constant state of fear, of course, cold and starvation. I mean, the big deal was to get some potato peels. Peels, not the potatoes themselves, and to roast them. Well, my father died of typhus, which was a raging infectious disease at the time. It was raging in all the ghettos and concentration camps because of the lack of hygiene, lack of nutrition. My mother learned, she got wind of the fact that there was going to be a rescue of some children, or orphan children. So she lied. She put me on the list as an orphan. Technically, I was only half an orphan by then. But she did that to save my life. I left on one of the cattle trains that brought millions of Jews to the death camps, to Auschwitz and the others. There were, by the way, more than 42,000 concentration camps. It wasn't just a few. And on the train, again, I befriended a family. When we got to the harbor city, there were three small boats that were waiting to take us. And they had lists assigning people, each one, to their assigned boat. I was assigned to the boat with the orphan children, but I refused. I absolutely refused, no matter what. They couldn't convince me to go in that boat, no matter what. And I cried and cried, had a temper tantrum, I guess. But I wouldn't budge. Everybody boarded, and I was left all alone. I was sitting on my little valise, and I just wouldn't go on that boat, no matter what. Miraculously, they gave in to me. And I went on the boat with the family that I wanted to be with. During the night, a submarine torpedoed the boat with all the children. And I didn't find out about it until the morning, when people were still very, very, very upset. None of the children survived. And I thought to myself, well, I was right. I was right not to obey. That's a lesson that I think has kind of made who I am. In back of my mind, it's there. I know that if I don't trust something, if I don't want to do something, I don't. You can't argue with your own experience, and I wish people now would draw on their own experience and intuition and not listen to authorities. I landed here on January 8th, 48. Adjusting to America was harder, much harder. When I looked around, really, New York was, you know, glamorous and pretty well, people were well off. And I thought, where was everybody? Where was everybody? Well, you know, as life went on, I learned that there are many instances where terrible things, including genocides, happen in one corner of the world, and the rest of the world is totally disinterested.
My name is Sarah Gross, and I was born in Budapest in 1932. I really had no problem growing up in a It wasn't a ghetto, actually, but I didn't feel anything different. I had a happy childhood. I even studied the piano, and it was up until the Germans came in, you know, into the city, which was quite late in the war. But later on, everything changed. Okay, my father was back in a hard labor camp, and my mother was taken to the concentration camp. You know, it's so difficult. You know, now that you know started it, just digging into the past. It's like opening the Pandora's box, you know. Suddenly things come up back to me, and thinking of how it turned out to be, what happened, and the whole process. So when my mother got into the concentration, was taken away from the superintendent who spied on her. She told the Nazis, there is another Jewish lady there in that apartment, take her away. That's how she got there. Luckily, you know, with children, they didn't get children below 16. That is a deja vu, you know, I feel exactly, I mean, people tell us what to do now. People are telling us how to do, how to go, what to shop, closing, and because of what? Because of the false, whatever it is. I don't believe in the COVID. I don't believe in COVID-19. I don't, simply don't. It's all man-made to make our lives miserable. That's it. I can definitely say what I want, so I lose friends. What can I do? So this is how you say your friends are, actually. But unfortunately, I don't want to die feeling the same way as I did when the Nazis came in, you know. I have to get a deep breath, you know. What did we reach this point? People need a disaster to wake up. This is one disaster, and they didn't learn from history so far. What happened? What happened to people? They don't learn anymore. They don't want to know. They just go on and on and on, the same thing. And a few of the top can tell us what to do. And we bit like no more puppets like that. We are pulled from the string from the top. We don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to. Anyways, I'm so upset about this whole situation. Really, I am. I see what Israel is doing now. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. It's just terrible how they are, you know, they agree, they're going with the same things, with the booster, another booster. My great-grandchild is 1 year old now, and looking him, seeing him growing up, that's my booster. That's my booster. This is what keeps me alive, actually. It's just unfathomable what's happening to people. What happened to the educated, the scientists, the doctors, and all the other big shots? They all think this way? I doubt. It's not just the Jews. It's the whole world, you know. It's like a twilight zone. You know, us already dying of the Holocaust survivors. How many left of us, you know? Even though the people live now until 100, but what kind of life they have? What kind of life? This is no life anymore. I was so active where I have no idea. And now I'm sitting with, I feel like in a jail, you know, whatever we call normal anymore. We don't know what normal is, you know. How do we know that? Because everything is so abnormal. Everything just doesn't make sense. Things don't make sense anymore. And then how people don't see that. And they are blind to all this. And my close friends, you call them close friends, they go, oh, yeah, we have to live with it, you know, we have to get used to it. I said, no, we don't have to. We don't have to. You go ahead and do it. I won't be among them, definitely. I don't want any more jabs, and I am sorry I took the first two because I didn't want to lose friends. Everybody was running to get the first two. And I got them, and I'm not sorry I did. Maybe that's why I cannot walk. I don't know. Who knows what goes on? Honestly, I don't know anymore. I don't know. And it was because of the disaster we had, you know, in the Holocaust. It all came to that point. We don't want to live again the same miseries and the same telling us what to do. Hoping for the best, you know, that all this will be lifted and people will open their eyes and they see what goes on. But it will take a long time. It will take a long time.
So I knew right away that what the media was saying was not consistent with the truth. It wasn't reality. But all of a sudden, Governor Cuomo decided that the prescription of hydroxychloroquine for patients with COVID-19 in the outpatient setting was to be prohibited. Now, this is a drug that's been around, FDA approved, for 65 years, and it's been used over a billion times. That was the beginning of my recognition of absolute medical tyranny and evil. And just keep in mind that my patients were dying. I came up with an approach. They stopped dying. Then there was a government decree that put a barrier between me and my patient. You know, the doctor-patient relationship used to be sacred. And the patients couldn't get any more of that medication, and they started dying again. That's how I got into COVID-19. Anything that gave people hope, whether it was hydroxychloroquine or later ivermectin, or even just a simple concept of early treatment, which is common sense, was marginalized, vilified. Any doctor who spoke up against the government narrative was immediately deplatformed. So I noticed debate and truth were irrelevant. What was relevant was a narrative that the government wanted you to know. And so I started looking deeper, trying to get a better understanding of what is really going on, because nothing made medical sense. My data, which was published in the internationally peer-reviewed journal, showed a 84% decrease in hospitalization and death if high-risk patients were treated early. Now, subsequently, that data has been corroborated by dozens of peer-reviewed papers treating patients, high-risk patients, early with an anti-inflammatory, antiviral combination of drugs. It didn't matter if it was hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. What mattered was that it was given at the right time frame to the right patient. And that showed, a meta-analysis showed an 85% reduction in hospitalization and death. So to give you a sense of scale of what we're talking about, out of 900,000 dead Americans, we could have prevented 760,000 from going to the hospital.
I'm honored to be here. My name is Michal Green, Michael Green in Hebrew. And I'm a rabbi. I'm an ordained Orthodox rabbi for over 26 years. And I've served as a representative, a shliach of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I've run founded and ran a Chabad house and synagogue in Westboro, Massachusetts for the past 20 some years. I started seeing very frightening signposts that were kind of warning me of what was coming up ahead, all the way back in June of 2019, when the state of New York eliminated religious exemption to vaccination. And I saw that as a very disturbing trend that happened in California. I saw that as a violation of an individual's human rights and their body autonomy. And when COVID, the alleged pandemic, began, I felt it was my duty to protest every aspect of COVID policies and public health policies that were not scientifically substantiated, because that was the justification for the Holocaust. It was the justification for Stalinist persecution of Jews. And it's been a justification for mass murder and marginalization of a minority for since time immemorial. So I saw COVID policies as a repeat, a kind of repeat of from the pages of history that we never learned the lesson from.
Hervé Seligman. I'm a scientist who does biomedical research and who by chance stumbled on that issue of vaccinations for COVID. My father and his parents understood they were able to hide, to escape and go to England. When I think of the parallels with what happens today, the big difference I see is that there was somewhere to escape at the time. So there was England, you could escape to England. Maybe England would have fallen or there wouldn't have been Churchill, but there was Churchill. And one of the questions we have to ask is, who is the Churchill of today? Not sure there is. We can't know where we could escape. They succeeded to globalize the problem. And anyone who pushed for globalization, knowingly or unknowingly, created this. Mm-hmm. That includes the control of banks, global control of banks, whatever it is, that's what we are dealing with. At the level of the parallels, it's really this slow increase, incremental laws or mandates and so on. And that's what my grandparents told me. They remember, not my father, but they remember one law and then one law and then one law, and everybody saw, oh, maybe it's stopping, and they stayed because they didn't feel like going away, or and then suddenly you couldn't go away.
Yes.
And now it's more difficult because there isn't where to go, but the incremental thing that goes to worse, everybody thinks it can't be the same because there are no gas chambers. So first, that's wrong, because these injections are a time bomb, a gas chamber, and that's what they don't understand. And the third point is, you don't wait until then. You then it's too late. You have to warn people before, while you're on the way, while they tell you, don't go out of home, don't go into the pub, don't go there and there, and it makes no sense. A big difference was you knew who to fight. And for the last 2 years, you don't know who to fight. Yeah. There was an army to draft into. My grandfather knew he would volunteer to the British Army. My mother's father went to the French Army. Mm-hmm. They fought more or less successfully, but they did fight. And these were indeed, they were actually fighting the bad guys, but this time you can't know.
That's right.
The fog of war that we have today is the same idea, but it's much worse, maybe than ever. Then there is, maybe the brainwashing is much worse than at that time. I don't know, that I can't know. But it looks like you see people walking or biking in the park alone with masks. That's amazing.
So my name is Henny Fischler, and I'm for the moment I'm living in Israel. I was born in Belgium in the year 1938. When I was about 4 years old, the Germans came into Belgium. When my father, my mother, my brother, and myself wanted to flee, we were caught at the border to France by the Germans, and went to Drancy. When we were in the cell in Drancy, I don't know how, but my mother succeeded to send a little note to my aunt who was already in France that we are there. So my aunt sent the passeur with money, and he bought us, my brother and myself, from the Germans. My brother was put in an Italian family, and I was put in a cloister with and I was very badly treated there. One day, I don't know what I did. I don't know. I did something wrong. I don't know what. And they put me on the table and took all my clothes off. And I was naked before all the kids and so on. My parents perished in the Auschwitz, so I don't know them. The only picture that I have from there is only what I said in the cell, in the prison. I fought with my children and my grandchildren. Today, I don't say anything anymore. They don't listen to me. They don't want to listen to me. They are afraid from the truth. That's what I think. I don't know. I can't explain it. I can't explain why are they so stubborn not to listen to me. Not to me. You know what? Don't listen to me. But ask questions. Ask the doctors. Ask the lawyers. Ask, I don't know who, but ask and get some answers. And nothing. And when I'm sending them some, you know, from doctors, from lawyers, from Dr. Zelenko, from the, you know, don't send me anything anymore. I don't want to listen anymore. What shall I say? I don't know.
Well, my name is Martineke Grossman, Burmeister. I came to Israel from Holland. The founder of my father was Jewish during the Holocaust. That meant also his brothers and his mother. His father wasn't Jewish. He was Dutch. And during the Holocaust, when it started, my grandfather said that it's none of anybody's business if we are Jewish or not. So when the Nazis in Holland said that Jewish people need to register, he says, I'm not going to do it, and nobody in the family is going to do it. You're not going to do it. It's none of anybody's business. And that decision saved their lives, because the Nazis did not have proof. They suspected it, and they thought it, and they did everything to make their life miserable. They even fired my grandfather's father, who was working for Amsterdam. They fired him because they wanted him to divorce his wife, who they thought, but they didn't have proof, that she was Jewish. She was Jewish, but nobody knew for sure. And they fired him because they said, if we suspect that your wife is Jewish and you are not divorcing her, it means that you should not work for us. You should not. So he said in front of them, and he said, well, not having a wife, not having a job, not having a wife, not having, oh, I prefer not have a job. And he left. And he said from that moment on, people took care of him. They get their, there was no money in that time, but they get all the time food, and somebody took care of them. And then they said, well, you know what? They think we're Jewish. They cannot do anything according to the law in Holland, but let's do something else. Let's behave differently. If they think we're Jewish, we can help Jewish people, because nobody suspects that we, the Jewish people, that they suspect that we are Jewish, that they're going to help other people, Jewish people, to help them. So in their own home, and they were living during the whole World War in Amsterdam, like Anne Frank, in a house on the third floor, and they had another fourth floor that was regular, and there was the Jewish couple living all that time, and they were just fooling the Germans, they were fooling the Nazis. And the brother of my father, of my grandfather, he was in dealing in art, and he was himself a painter, making beautiful paintings in the United States and in Europe. There are in churches and in Bet Knesset, you have windows that he created. He was very an artist. So he thought, if I'm good in that, I can do other things. So he created all kind of fake identity cards for people, and he helped other Jewish people, and that's the reason that they in Israel, in Yad Vashem, we have a tree on the name of my great grandfather and great grandmother, and the brother of my grandfather. And they just, I don't know, they said they were scared, but making their fear a way of stop to live or to be who they are, that was not an option. So what I learned from that, he always told me, if you have to lie to live, lie. And it sounds very bad, but he says, if you have to lie to live your life, lie. It's not, bad people go away in the end. And you have to stay true to yourself and do whatever you think is right and ask questions. Never just do what people tell you to do. And I think that helped me a lot in my life, especially what happened today or the last 2 years. I asked questions. I went straight to Pfizer, they have a website, and you can see exactly what this vaccine does and not does. And so it's very simple. I just asked questions, and I read, and I got informed, and I said, well, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do something I don't want to do. So, and I think that's what I learned, to be free. This is freedom, the freedom to choose, the freedom to be whoever you want to be, and listen to your instincts and to your intuition and follow your own heart. And it's exactly what I'm doing, what I'm telling people to do. So that's what I learned during this time, that in times when things get tough, that yes, my grandfather, he's and my whole family, they are a great example how I want to be.
I really truly see a parallel, and the parallel is really undeniable. I feel that any objective person should be morally outraged by any time government or corporations band together to trample on individual human liberties. I see this as a moment of truth for humanity. What we're clearly seeing here is a replay of the same telltale signs of what precipitated the Holocaust in the 1930s. The marginalization of a minority, or identifying the minority as a threat to public health or a threat to a public health risk. That is exactly what Goebbels did. And then that was the right out of the Nazi playbook, may their names be erased. And there is nothing more morally reprehensible than government or authority of any kind declaring a human being and other human innocent human beings as a public health risk. And it doesn't matter if these people claim to be doing so innocently for the greater good, because that's what Nazis did as well. But that doesn't justify marginalization, persecution, and apartheid, and ultimately eugenics policy targeting innocent human beings. And what we're seeing nowadays is precisely that. But for the last 80, 70 some years, we're chanting never again. We'll never allow this, and we can never allow the marginalization of a minority ever again. Those same liberal organizations are doing exactly that. Just recently, there was a Jewish woman who herself was also a Holocaust survivor, who was asked to speak at an event in Touro College for Yom HaShoah, for Holocaust Memorial Day. And they canceled her because she could not show her vaccine papers. Can you imagine? And this was done at Touro College. This is an Orthodox Jewish institution. And they have become the purveyors, modern day purveyors of tyranny, of persecution and marginalization of a minority. What we're seeing now is that this is not just the prelude, as you said, to the Holocaust. We are witnessing genocide happening right now, global genocide. We are witnessing right now, I don't know if your viewers are aware of what has been occurring in Shanghai, and what governments around the world are doing to people. People are literally being left to die, and they're being locked into their homes. They're being denied nutrition, hydration, access to medical care in the name of combating an amorphous, invisible disease. And that's exactly what the Nazis were doing, which had no scientific substantiation. And that's really the issue here now. And this is what I appeal to people. I appeal to people, to scientists and people who work in the medical field, that you have an opportunity after 70 some years to atone for the Holocaust by doing what? By no longer standing by in complicity or collaboration with genocide, with eugenics, with persecution of a minority, with scapegoating a minority. And this is what our elected and unelected officials are doing, blaming the unvaccinated. It's like blaming the un-Aryan. It's the same thing. It just has a clever twist to it. It's the same thing. It's the same genocidal totalitarian tyrants doing the same thing all over again. And the only thing is they gave it a facelift. Now it's not at the hands of brown coats. Now it's the hands of white coats in the name of science. So what's happened is that intelligent people have suspended their own critical thinking. If this is what the CDC or the AMA dictates, this is the policy, then we have to support the policy. The policy matters more than the individual, more than my oath to my individual patient, more than the Hippocratic or the Mamedean oath. And that is a violation of medicine. That's a desecration of medicine. It's a desecration of religion. It's the cynical subversion of every of our entire society, where everyone becomes a policeman of tyranny, of a policy of tyranny. And this is the important thing, Vera, also. I feel that all of this, you know, what is it called? Plausible deniability. And everyone wants to wash their hands for it and says, you know, it's not me. I was just doing my job. Well, that is exactly what every German and every Ukrainian and every Pole who took part of the mass killings and participated or banned people from stores back in the 30s, that is exactly what each one of them said. We were just doing our job. We're taking orders. And at one point, do people wake up? At what point do the medical-minded people and people of scientific backgrounds, at what point do they wake up and realize that the entire narrative has been hijacked and there is no free discussion. There's no dissent allowed. We're living in times of tyranny, book burning, censorship. At what point do they realize that? Do they have to wait till they get censored?
Well, that's another thing, another parallel is the grandfather who was in the French army, he got into camps and he always feared after that the doctors, because he said these are the worst. And he saw that already in the 40s. Mm-hmm. He said it's basically antinomic to what we understand should be medicine and the fact that so many doctors, normal doctors, would take part into that. He saw them doing all kinds of experiments on people, entering the barracks with huge syringes and things like that. So he saw that. And when he had a heart disease when he was 60 and so on, it was such an issue to bring him to trust to get an operation that could keep him 15 more years alive or even 20 more years alive. And because he couldn't believe that he really didn't trust the doctors. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we really see today.
Yeah.
I hear things when I go to the doctor, I'm actually mishandled. Mm-hmm. And that everybody now knows about that. But that's a real parallel with what happened at that time.
Mm-hmm. It's happening now all over the world with this COVID. I didn't take any shots. I'm against it. I'm against the mask. I'm against people who are telling me what to do with my body, because it's a lie. It's a big lie. When people are so blind, I can't stand it. I have to try to convince them to open their eyes, to open their ears, not to go like sheep. We went like sheep in the Second World War. You didn't understand anything. You didn't learn anything from this war. This is a war. This is another war. Okay, it's a biological war, but it is a war. Don't do things without questioning. I was so angry that people are so blind and they don't understand anything and they don't learn anything. I want to show the people that we are going again to another situation that is it's horrible. You are going like sheep again and again and again. What is frightening also is that today we know that the Nazis, they didn't die. They are still living in between us, even here in Israel. I don't know how they did it, but they are here, and I know they are working silently, mm-hmm. but they are here, and they are doing so bad things, and that's what I don't know. I don't know how to fight them. This is in God's hands. I don't know how to fight them. Only 20% of the Jews came out from Germany. It will the same thing be here now.
I think when you look back to the Holocaust, I never understood how Germans can become Nazis and can just do what they tell you to do. But I don't want to make the whole comparison because we are not there yet. I mean, nobody was sent. I mean, there were people sent in Australia to camps, but they didn't kill them there yet. That's true. But the process that we are going through is part of what they were doing to them. And I see that it's possible. It's not so crazy at all. Most people just think, well, we need to do what the government says and they want what is good for us. And they trust them and they think that's the way it is. So when you look back to what happened in Germany, I can understand now that it happened. And that's even more, it's so scary that you can understand what happened there, that it happens again. Not totally, not with all the killings yet, but it could happen. It's not so crazy to think that it did happen. And it's terrifying that people do not learn from history and that they don't act on their intuition it's great. It's crazy that you do not understand that what's going on is not good for you. But yeah, with so many people.
My grandmother, who survived the Tsarist persecution and pogroms, and she survived Bolshevism and Stalinism, she told me the government is never allowed to dictate to you what is essential and what is not. And here I'm being told by the governor of my state that public worship, the communal worship, is not essential. So I decided right then and there, I got home, I told my wife, we are not shutting the doors of our synagogue, even for one day. And my wife said, well, what if someone gets sick? What if we get sick? What if we die? I said, we have to be ready to die. We have to be ready to die before we allow government to shut down our religious observances, our right to live and live freely, our essential human liberties. And that's why we never shut the doors of our synagogue. Many people were very upset at me. And a few weeks into this, people in my community and abroad were very critical of the fact that I refused to compromise my values and my freedoms with any aspect of COVID policy. The cancel culture of our times, if you are accusing me of being a public health risk without any substantiation, without any evidence that I'm causing risk to anyone, that is exactly what Goebbels did to our brethren and our brothers and sisters, our ancestors in Europe. When you call someone a public health risk, then you are now the dictator. You need to show evidence for that. And that's the problem with this. If we could somehow reach out to all these people who've fallen for this and are sitting by idly, quietly, in silent complicity or tacit collaboration with this extraordinary assault on humanity, on individual liberties, it's unprecedented. And you're sitting there and taking your front place, showing your vax card complicitly and proudly. How do you face yourself? Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence that vax card is protecting anyone? When I tell people that here we have forced experimentation without informed consent, which is exactly what Mengele did, and now we have doctors and nurses doing that throughout the country. And when I tell people that's what Dr. Mengele did, people said, oh, how dare you invoke the Holocaust? So what they got hyper-focused on the swastika, on the brown shirts, on that specific particular time and place, and they fail to see the horrific parallels. And not only that, you know what's happening? It's so insidious that I get censored when I invoke the Holocaust with regards to public health policy. I'm not allowed to invoke the Holocaust. So in the name of the Holocaust, they're stifling freedom of speech. They're burning books. They're censoring people. It's like, in the name of the Holocaust, they're carrying out a Holocaust. It's just unreal. The very idea that I need to suspend my reasoning and my conscience to become part of a group and do what and suspend my judgment to embrace what the group is telling me is good for the group, that itself is inherently anti-Jewish. It's anti-biblical. We are not allowed to collaborate with crimes against humanity even if it means sacrificing one to save many, this idea of sacrificing one human to save other humans is inherently perverse and anti-biblical. Public health policy is superstition. It's really pagan superstition. So our fear, our unsubstantiated fear, entitles us to force or to trample your individual human liberties. They're shouting these platitudes, never again. And I'm looking around the world, and it's here we go again on steroids. And they're saying never again, never again, watching TV, getting all teary-eyed when they see jets flying overhead in Israel. And meanwhile, so many millions of Jews now in Israel have been subjected to medical experimentation without informed consent. Like Dr. Mengele is shepping nachas from his grave, from his wherever he is. Rabbis, lay leaders, doctors, lawyers, professionals. You know, they can't see it. It's like the writing is on the wall. It's right in front of them. Humanity has been groomed. Every society, every level of society has been subverted. Religious institutions, organized religion has been subverted, and Orthodox Judaism has been subverted. And it's now time for people, for you know, the people who really want to stay true to God's to do God's work, are the people who are going to stand up in the name of truth and justice and medical freedom. I feel at this time, each and every one of us has a moral obligation to correct the wrongs of history, to stand up and be the Raoul Wallenberg. The only health that ever existed is the individual's health. There has never been a public health. We don't have to placate the public health gods. A doctor has to treat his or her individual patient for what's good for his or her individual patient. Every single medical procedure or medical practice needs to be considered with regards to how does it affect this individual patient. Is it necessary? Is it therapeutically necessary? Does this person have a condition? Does it have a diagnosed condition? This idea of treating a person as a risk without symptoms, without any scientific empirical evidence, is an assault on humanity. And this is what we have this opportunity now to truly correct all the evils of history by calling this out and by no longer complying but to be defying and taking back our freedoms. I feel like these evil, you know, diabolical eugenicists in the world, the people who are really behind this, yes, those people on top, that's just their chess piece. The one who's carrying out the evil, Fauci is so bad, or Bibi is so bad, or Bennett, or Trudeau. But what they're hiding behind it with plausible deniability. It needs to say, okay, yeah, Fauci's no good, we'll replace him. Cuomo's no good. Okay, Cuomo's gone. He fell out of favor in the population. So now there's this other person, Hochul, and she doesn't have all that bad baggage, and she's going to go and perpetuate the same tyranny. Now is the time. Now that was the Raoul Wallenberg moment. You could save one person, go save that person. And you are on the side of good. You are correcting the wrongs of history, and you are vindicating humanity.
The people who do that to us, they really want to exterminate us. You hear that, you see, they try to grab every child they can to inject it. Another thing that my grandfather, the one who was in the camps, told me all my childhood was, it is going to happen again. Be ready for the next time. He told me that many times. He told me it is going to happen again. I am certain that all the conditions are there. And that was in the 70s, 50 years ago. Yes, 50 years ago. He really told me that all the time. He saw it coming. He probably saw in the society, all the roots, all the ingredients were there for it to happen again. And that's maybe the reason that we see today. So he was able to compare, to see the structure of society and the way people thought before the war. Mm. And he saw it all the time, and he was in France. He would see it. He told me it will happen again. He was certain it would happen again. That was ingrained in me, really, that the idea that the administration, that the state are not in your favor, that they mishandle you, that you might from one moment to the other lose everything by the strike of a pen, that suddenly you have no rights at all. That's something that you suddenly lose your citizenry. From one day to the next, they had nothing, everything was taken. This is the bank account story, I'm saying, of Canada. It's probably happening in other places already. But people have to understand this is the money of particular people, of individuals. It's not only of a state. You can't do that. That means you can't live in a society where there is no right to property. Right. And that's a very, very, very big parallel with the 30s and the 40s. You were Jewish, so this isn't yours anymore.
Right.
And apparently people don't want to see the parallels now, because it is really similar.
That's
it's extremely similar. You feel like it's really the same people who are behind it. It's not about Hitler as a puppet. It's people, we still don't know who was behind it. One of the things that was being tried and done on many people was sterilization.
So, yes.
And so a common denominator is not only euthanasia, but especially eugenics.
Absolutely.
That is behind the two periods. And these people, we say there are too many people here. And what does it mean? There are too many people for the earth. And that's what they all say. A lot of people say that. And that's exactly the Lebensraum idea, vital space idea of the Nazis at the time. We need Lebensraum.
Yeah.
We need vital space. So today they say, yeah, we need that, so we kill as many people as possible, which is what the Germans said. We need to conquer and kill the people living there so we have enough space. And some we keep as slaves. So in that sense, it looks very similar. It looks, but people can say, yeah, but the injection, you assume the injections are going to kill so many people. And we don't see it yet. And I do see people saying that there are different production lots. And I cannot confirm it on my own, but I do see changes over periods in the lethality of the injections.
Mm-hmm.
So, or in how much people die shortly after injection versus more lately. And I have to assume that, let's say, what was injected exactly a year ago or 6 months ago, that's not the same.
Right.
The questions are about the long-term effects. Will people die of some AIDS-like syndrome, meaning immune deficiency problems or not? And then we are back to the issue of the gas chambers, when people say it's not the same thing because we don't have the gas chambers, but the gas chambers is the final solution, it's the end point that we know of from that time, and we are not yet there, and we extrapolate from the direction that we see of the different mandates, measures, whatever is happening, of their what they say they want. And so we continue that, and that's why we say it's the same. It's not only, but we already, in what we see today, we see the parallels, like this forced control of everything, which is today much worse. In that sense, a lot of things people say, no, it's not like at that time. No, in many ways, it's worse today than at the time.
Absolutely.
It is worse. It's maybe not worse in the cruelty of how they kill people. Maybe not. But the total control is beyond anything. At that time, they didn't succeed to destroy family as well as they succeeded now. It was one of the parallels between today and then, is that the worst part already then was propaganda, false information, information war.
Yes.
My great-grandparents wouldn't have been killed if they had the correct information. Or if maybe they had it, but they believed the wrong one. Without this information, it's basically this information that killed them. After that, what made it possible that they could be physically killed was the disinformation.
Yeah.
Yes, that is exactly what we are seeing. I would say that's another common point with that the previous time.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of intellectuals and universities who went with Nazism.
Yes.
I think in the States it was Columbia, if I'm right. And indeed, the control of science and deciding what is the right science,
yeah,
and the Aryan science and what is the Juden science,
yeah,
Judenwissenschaft.
Yeah.
That is another point today that they say that's what they call the Faktenchecker, the false science and the right science.
Right.
This is a very strong parallel. And as we said before, I think the disinformation point is the worst part,
yeah,
or the worst tool, let's say. And that's where we see it. And it's indeed the same. There was Aryan-Wissenschaft and Juden-Wissenschaft, meaning Jewish science versus Aryan science. And this we see today. That's something they will... I mean, if you come to the parliament and you can really tell them when you say this one is allowed to teach and this one is not allowed to teach, or this is allowed to be taught and this not, that's exactly what they did at the time.
Yeah.
Judenwissenschaft.
Right.
And you can use German in Luxembourg, by the way.
If we go only with technology, then I think a big part of humanity, who we are exactly, is going to disappear. So it makes us less smart and less connected. Maybe that's what they want, in a way, that we're connected to what they want us to see and what they want us to hear. And I believe that we just really need to disconnect from most what goes around and go a little bit more inward and listen to ourselves. And yes, to be informed, but not by only mainstream media or the doctor. 2 years, everybody told us we need to get the vaccine and everything. And now suddenly one day there was Corona, the next day it was gone. And nobody's talking about it anymore. I mean, that's the way in Israel. Suddenly it's okay. We move on to the next thing. That's not the way it should work. People need to be held accountable for what they did to people. This was really terrifying for many people. Oh, it's also hard to say, well, I was really stupid, or I was really wrong, or why didn't I ask questions? And it's very hard for people to acknowledge that they were wrong. You know? So it will take time. What I also see is that they make us believe that we are responsible for somebody else. I am responsible for the health of somebody else, and I don't know what he's doing, what he's eating, what he's smoking, where his environment is. I don't know anything about it, but I'm responsible for him, and he is responsible for me. So nobody's really responsible for anything anymore. So there is no responsibility at all, because I cannot be responsible for somebody else's health, and he cannot be responsible for me. So in the end, nobody is responsible for anything. We all need to do whatever they say, which is crazy. There were many people who also my grandfather said there were nice people who did really terrible things that you would never ever thought that they would listen to the Germans or to the Nazis. Yes, he always told them, don't call them Germans, they were Nazis. So he said that really regular, normal, nice people did the most horrible things, had the most horrible thoughts. And they didn't know he was Jewish, so they were talking freely to him. And it's so scary to see that people, regular, normal, nice people, can just go after this kind of behavior and that they think it's okay for the common good. There is no common good.
There's a cornerstone teaching from the founder of the Chabad movement, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. We must hear the cries of the child. So this is what we have to tell these people. You know, it's okay to ban all these children from school. It's okay to ban these students from an education. It's okay to ban all these parents from having a livelihood for this greater good. We have to hear the cry of the child. Who are we marginalizing? Who are we condemning to poverty, to illiteracy, to dependence on government? Who are we harming here with all these mandates? The justification, the greater good justification, it doesn't hold water, because you have to hear the cry of the individual that these mandates are harming. And because we've turned a blind eye, blind ear, and this is the moment in history to open up your ears and open up your eyes to the cries of the individual. The individual's life, the individual's rights matter. And this is what I don't understand, what's happened. Like, in other words, and then people say, oh, the highest thing is safety and security. No, that's not true. Safety and security is not the highest value. Freedom is a value worth dying for. People said, oh, we have to sacrifice our freedoms for the sake of safety and security. That's not accurate. There are values worth dying for. And kowtowing to tyranny, submitting to tyranny is not okay. That's what we need to be. We need to stop being afraid of death. We can embrace our mortality. And if we're going to die, then so be it. But we must be free. And that's it. And that's the moment. This is the moment of truth, of not being a silent, complicit person on the sideline doing nothing, but standing out and speaking out and insisting on our God-given freedoms, God-given liberties.
Much has been said about the anti-Semitism. Much has been said about the well-advertised calamity impacting the Jews. But all of that would have been an impotent compound had it not been for the energy supplied by five corporations. The first one was the Ford Motor Company, and through its leader, Henry Ford, as they proliferated this extraordinary falsehood that the Jews controlled the world and the Jews were planning to uproot all the militaries, control the media and the governments. And he did this, of course, through the Dearborn Independent newspaper, and his works were actually proliferated by the Ford Motor Company through their dealerships. The information was translated into many languages, including German, and Hitler studied these. And it was from Ford that his anti-Semitism entered a new dimension. And that dimension was not just that the Jews were other and a bad other, but they were an enemy trying to uproot the planet and humanity. The second of these companies was General Motors, because of course General Motors gave the Nazis the wherewithal to wage war. The Blitz truck was produced by General Motors for the Blitzkrieg. Prior to this, Germany was essentially unmotorized. Yes, they had a lot of very pretty antique looking cars that were running around, but they had no mass production. General Motors also produced indispensable components for the Ju-88 bombers, engines for the Panzer tanks, landmine explosives, and torpedo heads. So from land, sea, and earth, General Motors was the arsenal of fascism and Nazism before they were the arsenal of democracy for the Allies. This essentially forces us to confront the fact that there would have never been a Holocaust on horseback. The third and fourth of these companies was the Carnegie Institution, which was a corporation, and it was based on the fortunes of Andrew Carnegie and the Rockefeller Foundation, which created all this eugenic nonsense that Jews were a eugenic menace, that Jews were some kind of organic bacteria that had to be counteracted and could infect future generations. In fact, the Rockefeller Foundation actually sponsored the assistant who ultimately went into Auschwitz to perform the twin test, and that was Josef Mengele. It was more than just proliferating the science. They built the institutions. They financed the fellowships. They were there right through and after the beginning of the war, and actually didn't pull out until the United States came in December of 1941. But by that time, it would have been too late. but the even more indispensable culprit was International Business Machines, IBM, the solutions company, which offered Hitler from the very first moment in January 30th, 1933, right through the last gasp of the Third Reich in May of 1945. They offered him all the solutions that he desired to achieve his goals, even the final solution. And so it was IBM that designed the custom punch cards, which were the forerunners of computers, and they were able to plan. IBM actually planned all six phases of the Holocaust. And that's because the Third Reich could only go as fast as the technology would allow them. And these phases were the identification of the Jews, the expulsion from society, the confiscation of their assets, the ghettoization of the Jews, the deportation to camps, and even the extermination of the Jews. It was IBM that designed and created the extermination by labor program, where they would identify all the skills of the Jews and match those up to labor needs. And of course, then there was a transfer list that they generated, and Jews were moved back and forth through the IBM list, which in Germany was known as the Hollerith list. Had it not been for these five corporations, the size and scope of the Holocaust would have a numerical quotient that does not resemble the 6 million that we know today. There are museums in the United States who do not wish to touch the issue of American involvement when it comes to corporations. We see major documentaries. They don't mention IBM. Money has been given. And also there is a mass amnesia and mythology that takes over, that when Americans saw the actual fruits of their scientific frauds, of their racial ideas, the fact that the Carnegie Institution helped design the Nuremberg laws and the Nuremberg codes, when they actually saw this with the camps being liberated, they developed this, no, this was not us. We did not have a hand in this. And of course, when I say liberated, I don't really mean liberated. They were freed, because there were no liberated concentration camps. There were no task forces that went out to find Dachau or Auschwitz and open the gates. These camps, one by one, were liberated accidentally by soldiers going somewhere else when they happened upon them, including Auschwitz, which was liberated just by accident by the Ukrainian National Front troops, who said, "What is this across the way from the road where they were bivouacked?" The idea that FDR and the Allies had no planes to bomb the tracks going to Auschwitz is balderdash. It's an outright lie, because they did not need precision bombing. They said, "Well, we didn't have the precision bombing." They were carpet bombing all the way from Normandy to Hamburg, and they never thought twice about not carpet bombing when it was needed. Why didn't they liberate these camps? Why? They didn't want to.
Nicht kein Mulas, die Geist im letzten Weg. Chotsch Himmel in Bleien, verstehen Bleie Dreck. Weil kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt zu. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du. Kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebänkt zu. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du. Von grünen Palmenland bis weißen Land von Schnee. Wir kommen um mit unser Pein, mit unser Weh. Und wie es gefallen ist, das Spritz von unser Blit. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewehr, unser Miet. Und wie es gefallen ist, das Spritz von unser Blit. Spotzen wird dort unser Gewehr, unser Miet. Es wird die Morgen sind bei Gilden ins dem Hain. In der Nächten wird verschwinden mit dem Feind. Rot versammeln wird die Sinnende, ajo. Wie ein Parol soll sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Rot versammeln wird die Sinnende, ajo. Wie ein Parol soll sein das Lied von dort zu dort. Das Lied geschrieben ist mit Blut und nicht mit Blei. Sie nicht kein Liedl, in der Feuge läuft er frei. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fahnen die gewendet. Du's Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Du sollt der Volk zwischen Fahnen die gewendet. Du's Lied gesingen mit Naganes in die Hand. Versuch nicht kein, du hast die Geist im letzten Weg. Gott Himmel in Reine, Verstern, Bläue, Dreck. Weil kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrängt. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du. Kommen wird noch in sein Reus gebrängt. Es wird ab heute an unser Trott, wir senden du.